Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's Nick and Neil's Summer Millwall History Show.
Welcome to Nick and Neil's Summer History Show. Slightly different approach for this one, listeners, because we come, Neil, to mourn the decline of one of the more fundamental parts of the match day experience, the match day theatre, shall I call it, the decline and demise of the match day programme, in particular, the news that's appeared online this week. But next season, 22-23, Millwall Football Club will no longer be producing a match day programme, in common with quite a lot of other clubs, in fairness. And like so much of modern life, Neil, you kind of get what you deserve on this, because I was just trying to think before we started this recording, when did I last buy a match day programme? And it's a long time ago. I can't actually remember. So that's a picture of how long ago that it is since I bought a match day programme. And rather like attendance at a cinema, going to your local pub, buying a newspaper, if you don't do it, you can't really complain when it dies, because economics is a relentless judge. But match day programmes, Neil, just don't sell like they used to. It's a sad demise. Will you miss the match day programme, mate?
I will miss the match day programme. I must confess, I do buy them.
Right.
I don't know why. I'm a traditionalist, I guess. For me, it's very much part of the match day experience. And also it's something to read on the way home, isn't it? If you're travelling.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Travelling back from an away game, you generally buy your programme and you whack it in your pocket until the long, arduous train journey home, and you start to read it if there's nobody else or there's no
to talk to. Yeah.
And it's also a reference of, you don't know who the opposition players are 9 times out of 10, do you? So you have a look on the back of the match day programme.
He's
playing, but I can see why it's declined, but it's a very, very sad day. I think it's been on the cards for quite a long time. A lot of clubs have stopped doing them over the last 2 or 3 years. I think the Football League, it was a requirement at one stage that a club had to produce a match day programme, certainly in non-league football requirements. But I think the Football League abandoned that idea just before COVID. And clubs jumped on it because they're quite, they're quite expensive to produce. You need a program editor, you need to pay contributors, there's printing costs. If you do pay contributors, some clubs do, some clubs don't. I don't think Millwall do.
I doubt we do, or have in the past.
But you can tell a good program from a bad program, but it's just a sad decline. It's just something that won't be there. It's another bit of football tradition that
it is.
It's
a sad thing. I've compared it with some might think it frivolous, but you know, the closure of newspapers. The internet is both a giver and a taker, and we've all gained a lot from the rise of the internet, but it's cost a lot of other traditional areas of life. And I think, you know, you you can't beat it. Unfortunately, it's like the rise of the printing press all those hundreds of years ago. You can rage at it, but you can't beat it. Talking about non-league, that's non-league scene. I notice a lot of non-league clubs now put out digital programs, which I don't really. I can't take to them. I've looked at them. Invariably, when you're at the match, you're looking on your phone, Neil.
It's not the same. It's not the same. No, as that.
It's not. It's the physical.
Yeah. It's much the same way as printed books and Kindles and Kindle apps for your iPad and things like that. There's nothing. You want the physical copy in your hand. You want to smell the. Yeah, but the print gives off a smell.
A certain vibe. Yeah. It's also a physical link, Neil, to games. And I think this is the problem that we is that a problem? Is it a problem? I don't know. I'm speaking as a baby boomer, listeners. I'm born in 1960. I come from a different time. And it's all very well for me to berate the modern generation. They live in different times. There's nothing you can do about it. But everything that you both have everything now in the sense of physical access to games. You can see so much live football. You don't know what to do with it. The likes of the TikTok and the social media generally allows you to see stuff constantly in real time, pretty much. But I don't know that you have that physical. Am I romanticising it, Neil? That physical connection to a game in quite the same way. I don't know. You can't recreate the past. I know, but just to give you a few numbers, if you want the problem illustrated, listeners. I'll check this with Billy Taylor before I did the show with Neil this afternoon. Average sales last season were just 8% of the attendance. So just 8% of people. You're in 88%, Neil, of people to buy a program. Less than 1 in 10 buy a program. That's down from 10 years ago. 18% 10 years ago bought a program. Of a typical order, the club sell of that print run. Club are selling only 25%. They're giving away 30% to the hospitality, guests and box holders. And the remaining 40% are being pulped, left unsold. Advertising opportunities are slimmer because not so many people buy the product. It's all online. When you factor in staff costs, it's become loss-making. Over £30,000, he says. I've got no detail on this other than Billy's reply to my message. Over 30 grand was loss was made on the program last season, and it's a consistent trend across the industry. So it's a tough decision, as he says here. I can see the economics, and I don't have an answer to it, Neil, because you know if you don't buy it yourself, you can't exactly moan when there's a consequence. But it does bring to an end a long, long tradition. I was trying to do a little bit of research into the history of Millwall programs. And as ever in these questions, I look at Lions of the South, which I don't know if you can beat this, Neil, or if you know differently, but in Lions of the South, the very first known Millwall program was pictured. There's a very faint picture. Millwall versus Wrexham played in December 1893, shortly after the club went professional. And this looked like just a double-sided sheet, to be honest. And that evolved into one of our old players, Obid Cagill, who produced a correct card. It was like a team sheet too, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was. I think he was a goalkeeper, served the club as a director, I believe.
Mm. Big name, yeah.
For quite a few years. And that was the forerunner, official eight-page programme. Cost one penny.
Yeah. Different times. The Cagill's correct card. I mean, just to be clear. I mean, obviously, Cagill is an unusual name. Cagill. Obed, it was his Christian name, Cagill. And he called it the correct card. It had like an apostrophe K-R-E-C-T. So it's correct in imitation of the accent, obviously, local accent. You can see those. You can see them online. I mean, I think they appear from time to time for sale. There's a whole scene of program collection and particularly, you know, what should we call them? Not antiquities, but, you know, what the early days kind of memorabilia of football. And these are quite sought after, Neil. Any Cagill's correct cards that are knocking around are not easy to come by, I don't think. I haven't seen many for sale in the various websites where you look.
No, and they go for quite a few under a pound, I should imagine.
I believe they do. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I know that Chris Bethel's got a large collection of them. And
I'd imagine Chris has, yeah. And I know Andy Sullivan, who I know is also a collector of stuff like that. I believe he's got some correct cards. The correct cards were effectively a double-sided sheet with the team names on them with adverts. The adverts are wonderful. They would have like the George Hotel or the, you know, local pubs and barbers and whatnot advertising on around the edge of the two teams laid out in the old 5-3-2 formation. They're wonderful, wonderful things to see. If you can see one, listeners, please do to take the chance. Obid Kagel being a player and then going on to make the program also is a great story as well, isn't it? I mean, there's something quite homely about that idea that one of your players will actually print and sell what was a program effectively. Lovely.
Yeah, quite entrepreneurial, really.
Absolutely.
That he had the foresight to think, oh, well, yeah, we can imagine the meltdown now if... Yeah, can you imagine Jed Wallace now staying on the strength of the fact he gets to,
you know, get the program,
he gets the printing contract for the program.
Wonderful, wonderful stuff. I mean, you can go searching on Google and you will see in the images. You just type in Millwall football programs, you'll see all sorts of designs over the years. Some of which are familiar. I'm just going back to that physical link now. I well remember the first time I saw a Millwall program, which was my first game, Millwall v Portsmouth, and it used to be like a blue colour with like a black template image on there, and it was called Action, and it had like this kind of italic headline, Action, with a football on it. And as a kid, it made a big impact on me. It looked glamorous. I mean, we were not a glamorous club, but at that point, I was fully prepared to believe we could be because of this kind of 60s Action pow kind of look to it with the teams on the back.
That was when you got the pull-out inside.
The Football League Review.
Remembering it, and then came back in the 80s as well. But that was wonderful. It was full of just generic... Rubbish.
Club news. Yeah, it was nothing very controversial. It was produced by the Football League, and they were given to clubs to put into as inserts into their matchday program. Quite a nice idea. I mean, this would have been the heyday, really, of program buying. I'm interested. One of the facts I picked out from Lions of the South is that the first program, shall we call it, evolved out of Obid Kagel's credit card for the opening of the new den, or Colblow Lane, in 1910. That was an official 8-page official programme, which, as we said, already cost a penny. And these would sell at the rate of 20,000. Contrast that now with Billy's, one in 10 buying it. So if you're selling maybe one in eight.
For the minute, propaganda. Sorry. <Maybe. but.
laughs> Now. Maybe that's 1,000 sales. I don't know. Contrast it. It's quite a big contrast. I mean, Neil, you're a historian. You love to look at the old memorabilia. There's nothing to beat an old club program for just the general feel and look. And any club, we're Millwall, so we look at our own. But whenever you look at any of these old programs online, the adverts, the phone numbers, the commentary and the editorials, they just give you such a picture of a time that's seems to me to be within touching distance, yet gone now forever. It's a shame. I don't know if there's a better word for it. That's a shame.
Yeah, the top program was actually, it was a way for people like Charlie Hewitt, bless him, to vent his spleen.
Yeah.
I think, long before Ken Bates thought of the idea, but at one stage, if you got on the wrong side of Ken Bates, you could receive the full frontal blast in the program from
the full Twitter treatment in the Cat Match Day program. You'd be named in that. Yeah.
That's pretty much what it was like. But there's nothing quite like. I like looking at old reserve team programs.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So you can see who played and who might not have made it, and who played for the opposition, and it's just a wonderful way of jogging your memory.
You can look,
I know that people have vast collections and they say, oh yeah, no, I don't look at them. And then every time the missus wants to have a clear out, your program collection is first in line, isn't it? It's immediately in our sights.
Do you collect them, Neil? I don't. Do you?
I got rid of a load. I'm like everybody else. I got rid of a load when I moved.
Last.
But to be honest, now I tend to keep them for a season, then chuck them away. Put them in the recycling at the end of a season.
Yeah. No, I used to, but I don't.
£3 a game now, isn't it? Times that is, what, £120 a season or whatever.
Yeah, it's a chunk.
Plus your away games. But, yeah, but it is a shame. It is a shame that they are so, they're space consuming, aren't they?
What I would say, I don't know if this is a criticism or again just the moanings of a baby boomer from a long time ago, but I'm speaking from memory, and Neil, correct me or leap in if you disagree, but programs of my era, so I'm talking about from the 70s, 80s and to some extent the 90s, were seen as fairly functional items. They had a bit of comment on the inside. You had the manager's notes. You would have an editorial or something of that kind. And then match day photos, a profile of the opposition, fixture list. Probably not much more. The odd advert for, you know, whichever company was involved with the club. But they were... short, sharp and functional items, and for me somehow the better for it. The thing that I would bemoan is the evolution towards trying to compete in being magazine, like, and you know, you mentioned £3 for a match day program. Modern programs seem to want to aspire to be, if not GQ, but something going down that road of like a proper magazine, and we've lost something in that process.
Yeah, it was a way of communicating, wasn't it? You didn't have Twitter websites and if you wanted to find directions to an away game, they generally had them in there.
From the RAC, would have the most cursory directions.
just head up north and you'll get there eventually.
Liverpool's off the M6, just head for Edinburgh Road, so say Anfield, you know.
And then just stop and ask somebody if you can't find one. But no, it was just, yeah, primarily it was a way of the club communicated things.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were interesting stories. They might have profiled older players and...
Yeah.
Things like that, and it was just a way of communicating, and as you did back then, and across as other than the South London Press, and I guess it was something to read. You didn't have your phone to look at half time, did you?
I mean, now you expect to get the pre-match team news. I mean, one of my rituals now is, you know, download the snapshot, the team news before kickoff. So I sound reasonably professional when I do this podcast, listeners. I think try to, I aspire to. The thing I would say is that old programs are just these wonderful treasure troves of snapshots of a certain time, a certain place, and we're going to miss them as a consequence now that they're no longer with us. I just wanted to mention the rise of fanzines, which were strange as it sounds now, because no one, unless you get it for nothing on the internet, Neil, no one buys anything, it seems to me, at games. But the fanzine scene began in the 1980s, particularly with the rise of the Lion Roars and No One Likes Us, as a kind of reaction to the fact that programmes didn't say much. So fans started to produce their own magazines to say something, you know, that they wanted to call it like it was. And those two have been beaten in the end, I think, by the rise of the internet. It's been destructive in some ways, isn't it, the net?
Yeah, fanzines were a way of the ordinary fan, I think, writing, wasn't it? And getting his point across. Really?
Absolutely, yeah. I got involved in making No One Likes Us, and then after that, CBL. It was quite a physical effort. You know, you had to write stuff. I would lay it out. I had no publishing or journalistic experience. You just do your best. So to some level, there was a certain charm to doing that. Then you actually got to physically take the stuff to the ground and sell it, and it was quite hard work. I kind of miss it and don't miss it all in one go sometimes, listeners.
Yeah, you just replaced it with podcasting, haven't you?
It's much easier. It doesn't involve standing in the pouring rain or the blasting sun or being part of the match day furniture. This is one of the other points I just wanted to make before we close on this edition, Neil. Buying the program, buying the fanzine, was part of the whole bustle of the ground outside. You know, you've got the hot dog man, you've got all the various points of contact. It's like the seven stations of the cross, listeners. You know, you do this, you got this, you got this, and that's one more thing that's no longer there now. The fanzine scene has kind of largely died away, and now to the match day program.
Yeah, that was actually Saturday night sorted, really, wasn't it? If you had kids and you had to go home after the game and
read the programme.
Yeah, you read the programme and the fanzine. On the way home. And
yeah.
Fanzine was an alternative view, wasn't it? It was it was certainly very lively. I can remember.
Well, it could get very lively. It was like the internet, Neil. Yeah. People would say the forbidden on there, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I can remember a couple of interviews with Reg Burr. One of them was after. Yeah, it was actually after he'd stood down as chairman and not long before he died.
He revealed all. That was in Lion Roars, TLR, as we would call it.
Yeah, and he was still Reg, wasn't he? Still had something to say. But
he certainly did.
And I can remember, did Bertram write a column?
I think Birch did. They got in touch with players were far more accessible. You've made this point, Neil. In your journalistic days, you could just talk to a player, couldn't you? You didn't have to go through a press office. You could ring them up.
And that column that Birch wrote, he slaughtered Denzel, Tim Cahill. He absolutely, but it was entertaining. You bought it just to read what nonsense. And especially the away match reports and things like that. They were so one-eyed where the referee got a rating and got slated.
Wonderful. I loved the Lion Roars. It was my magazine of choice. Died away in the end. All things come to an end, listeners, and so did TLR. But it was wonderful in its heyday, Neil, I think.
So it's a match day programme.
And here we are.
I just think it will be a death nailing your match day experience. I hope they produce something like a team sheet.
Funny enough, I was going to say Billy Taylor in his reply back to my message mentions that where is it? We are looking at alternatives such as a free team sheet, which can link to pre-match content, etc. So a team sheet. And we may come full circle now with a team sheet. We may come all the way back to Obi Cagill's correct card. And in fact, there's an idea. Billy, if you're listening, mate, call it Taylor's correct card and give away a free team sheet. Maybe at the turnstile as you go through, so you get a team sheet.
Yeah, we give them away on the continent. You go to games in France and not all clubs.
Yeah.
There's only a handful of clubs that produce anything like a match. Program, it's generally team sheets or printed bits of paper with the teams on it, basically.
I think that would be a great idea. If you're listening, Bill, call it Taylor's Billy's correct card and give it away on the turnstile, because I think it would be nice to a memento of some sort for games, Neil, is a valuable thing. It actually has a long-term value that is hard to beat in that way. There we are. Rest in peace, the Millwall Matchday programme. If you've bought the one for the Peterborough game, someone made this point on Mill Online I was reading earlier, then congratulations, you own one of the last Mill programmes ever printed. So,
and if you were lucky enough to play in the fan game, that I believe there's
a team. There we are. Yeah, the team. There's the future. We saw the future in the Mill fan game on Tuesday.
Stick it on eBay.
A formative part of my match-going experience. I think I'm going to conclude this RIP Matchday programme episode there. Thank you very much, Neil. Thanks for joining me.
It's Nick and Neil's Summer Millwall History Show.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.